Oh, so the talk this evening, I titled it from a quote from Wes Nisker, who actually used to have us sometimes chant this chant of enough, enough, we got enough stuff. After I posted the title and sent it off, went to Costco, like the last time I'm going to go to Costco this year, because I don't want to be exposed to like the madness that it turns into. And I actually walked around Costco in the back of my mind chanting Wes's chant. It was very helpful to just enjoy looking at all the things that are there, like going into a museum or something. There's just so many pulls towards excess, towards encouraging us to need to buy something to give or to receive something, whether we wanted that thing or not. Just this holiday season tends to be full of a lot of push and pull about giving, receiving, about holding on, wanting stuff, or wanting to give stuff or to give other kinds of like not just stuff, but all the ways that we can support each other. So yeah, it just seemed like this was a really good moment before we get into like the big momentum of what happens for a lot of us during this season to just take a pause and be a little bit more intentional about how we want to go forward into what's there's always some sort of barrage unless we go off on retreat or something at this time of the year. And it happens right at the time where biologically and in the dark, the long dark nights, our bodies really want rest. It's just the normal thing for, for us to kind of cocoon in a little bit during the long winter nights. And somehow we've got things all flipped around where we have all these lights at night and everything's, bright and everybody's really busy. So yeah, just that push and pull that's around us. And some people may have grown up with different kinds of traditions where it's not so much part of what everyone was expected to do, giving gifts and all that kind of stuff. So just including everyone's experience of what this season might be like, all of that is welcome. Yeah, so especially right now with all that's going on in the world, it's like we all really need this rest we get in the middle of winter. So we got plenty. We all have plenty to process as it is. So yeah, that pull toward that we will all be encouraged on our cell phones, and when we go log into whatever, there's going to be encouragement to buy stuff. So this pausing to think about our stuff and the stuff we already have, calling on another comedian here, like Wes Nisker was. Johnny, can you run this little clip? This is from George Carlin. How do I say who he was if people don't know? Definitely a 60s type guy, and one of like he yeah like up there with Robin Williams and those kind of folks for how much he was loved and appreciated for his humor. Anyway, yeah, can you go for that, Johnny?
I would have been out here a little bit sooner, but they gave me the wrong dressing room, and I couldn't find any place to put my stuff. And I don't know how you are, but I need a place to put my stuff. So that's what I've been doing back there, just trying to find a place for my stuff. You know how important that is. That's the whole meaning of life, isn't it? Trying to find a place for your stuff. That's all your house is. Your house is just a place for your stuff. If you didn't have so much goddamn stuff, you wouldn't need a house. You could just walk around all the time. That's all your house is. It's a pile of stuff with a cover on it. You see that when you take off in an airplane and you look down and you see everybody's got a little pile of stuff. Everybody's got their own pile of stuff. And when you leave your stuff, you gotta lock it up. Wouldn't want somebody to come by and take some of your stuff. They always take the good stuff. They don't bother with that crap you're saving. Ain't nobody interested in your fourth grade arithmetic papers. They're looking for the good stuff. That's all your house is? It's a place to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff. Now, sometimes you've got to move. You got to get a bigger house. Why? Too much stuff. You've got to move all your stuff. And maybe put some of your stuff in storage. Imagine that. There's a whole industry based on keeping an eye on your stuff. Enough about your stuff. Let's talk about other people's stuff. Did you ever notice when you go to somebody else's house, you never quite feel 100% at home? You know why? No room for your stuff. Somebody else's stuff is all over the place. And what awful stuff it is. Where did they get this stuff?
Well done. Thank you, Johnny. Oh, so yeah, just giving us a laugh to really look at, like, we have stuff and we're all like sitting someplace, you know, because we're in our homes probably, and we have a lot of our stuff around us. And you know, I talked to a former monastic about this whole business of like giving up all your stuff to go into the monastery, and I asked her, like, didn't you like keep some childhood treasures or family pictures somewhere? And she's like, no, I got rid of all my stuff. And she described how freeing it felt not to have to have responsibility for stuff. And that, you know, you didn't have very many personal possessions, but the monastery had what you needed. So you could feel at ease. You could relax. And then when, you know, she was in the monastery for probably almost 20 years and coming out, like, and having to face the consumer world again and going into Target, where she said there were four aisles of different kinds of toilet paper, just facing that again after having been in a world where, you know, or going and buying clothes after every single morning that you woke up, it was like, you know, burgundy, throw the shawl thing over the shoulder today and tomorrow and the next day. Like, you don't have to think about, what am I going to wear today? Like, not having to worry about any of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, just the possibility of feeling free from renunciation. It's like one of the more, you know, it's on way over on that end of the spectrum from what any of us are doing, I'm imagining. But yeah, just a way to think about these things to give us a little more breathing room around, yeah, what is my relationship with this stuff and how much do I identify with my stuff? And sure enough, if you put your stuff where somebody else, you know, wants to put their stuff, they're not going to like it. And same, you know, same for us. If somebody crowds us around, you know, like, it's a very touchy thing. And certainly if somebody takes your stuff, we really don't like that if they didn't ask. So yeah, all of those things, like, it's one of the things about being on retreat and being on residential retreat and taking the five precepts of saying that we're not going to harm, we're not going to lie, we're not going to steal, not going to misuse our sexuality, we're not going to get high. Just that that people are all saying that they're not going to take anything that's not freely given. It's so nice that you can just set something down and know it's going to be right there when you come back to it. Or if you lost it, you know, an earring or something, somebody's going to have pinned it up on the, you know, on the board. Anybody lose an earring? Like that, you know, just to be somewhere where everyone has agreed, we're not messing with each other's stuff. And then just watching also how much stuff you can accumulate in your little sitting spot, you know, and having your little piece of real estate in the meditation hall. And anyway, there's a lot about our relationship with all that that is, you know, is a deep, deep part of what practice is all about. That word renunciation never sounds like a lot of fun, but that's the word that tends to get translated, is, like, you know, letting go, releasing, like the freedom of letting go, the freedom of restraint. The basic precept of don't take stuff, like don't be greedy, don't take more than your share. It's a training to not take, like all the precepts are, don't harm, don't lie, don't steal. But there's a flip side to each one of them, that it's actually a training for if you are watching every time you feel greedy, like you want stuff, then just noticing that, just being able to notice when wanting happens, when desire happens. But then the other side of it too is noticing any impulse towards giving, towards generosity, like actually being able to register those things when they happen. Really, really helpful this time of year if you have a gift-giving tradition with other people in your life, just to be able to really notice what are we motivated by? Where's that really coming from? I've certainly had lots of sense of pressure of, oh, this is what we do. I have to do this. I have to make sure I have a thing for each person. Like I've certainly put a lot of pressure on myself in earlier years about those things. And just the sense of like when we don't try to take more than our share, we can relax. Like if we've been stealing things from other people, it's not, you're not we're not going to be peaceful when we sit down to meditate. So just the it's one of the ways of being blameless, just the freedom of blamelessness. Like when you know, oh yeah, I haven't been I haven't been selfish. That you can really have more ease for yourself when you sit down to meditate, or any time that you feel less, you feel more comfortable with other people because you're comfortable with yourself. Thich Nhat Hanh has. There's a lot that he's written about the refuges that can be found online, but he's taken each of the five, I'm sorry, not the refuges, the precepts. He's taken each of the five precepts and flipped it into something very proactive, and he writes them out beautifully. Like not killing, the precept of not killing, he calls reverence for life. Not misusing your sexuality, like the opposite, leaning in towards discovering what real love is. Not lying, on the other end of the spectrum, is loving speech and deep listening. So for not stealing, he calls it true happiness, which is about contentment, about being okay with what we already have. Knowing that it's enough. And one of the pieces he writes about that precept of not taking more than our share. I am aware that happiness depends on my mental attitude and not on external conditions, and that I can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that I already have more than enough conditions to be happy. So pausing to, like, no, hey, I'm safe right now. Things are okay. Like I'm in a comfortable place. Like any amount that we can actually notice that, then that sense of ease and contentment will make itself obvious more often when we practice our minds of looking for that and noticing when it arises. And then he, being just an extraordinary spokesperson for non-harming of all sorts, he takes it, way far in the proactive sense of like what it means not to cause harm from taking more than our share. One of the pieces he wrote about it, do not steal, possess nothing that should belong to others. respect the property of others, but prevent others from enriching themselves from human suffering and the suffering of other species on Earth. Boy, is that a tall order. bringing to our awareness the pain caused by social injustice, this precept urges us to work for a more livable society. So yeah, that flip side of not taking more than our share is about finding a way to it's kind of bodhisattva vows that he's coming from, basically, just taking care of the suffering of other beings. And we sure live in a place where it's an uphill climb. There's a thing called the Happy Planet Index that compares for each country in the world, like how much resources are being used compared to how much life quality there is. And the United States, out of 152 countries, is number 122. because we use way more resources and we're not happy. we're behind most of Europe, Latin America, the Caribbean, most of Asia, and we're the lowest of the G7 nations in the sense of well-being that we get from the amount we use. So I don't know if this is still true, but maybe renewable energy is changing this, but this is probably from about 10 years ago that the U.S. has been like roughly 5% of the world's population using 30% of the world's resources. So like that's just the world we live in, and the air we breathe, that's what it is. It just makes it a little more tangled, like the karma that we're in just being here. But just the sense of like, we're going to get it over and over again promoted to us that that's what's going to make us happy, is to get more things, to be more accomplished, to, you know, look better. And like, I'm going to get it. I'm going to finally get it all together. And, you know, just hold your breath. It's going to stay like that. And we've had the most opportunity, apparently, to prove to ourselves that that doesn't work, according to this Happy Planet Index. Yeah, and you know what actually brings satisfaction and peace is that for one thing, that sense of blamelessness, knowing I have not been doing things to harm others. You know, I've been trying to watch out for how I live and how it might be impacting others on a larger scale. Yeah, and then guarding our senses. You know what that might mean any time, but going into this very, very hectic time of year where there's always too much everything available for a lot of people, not for everyone by any means. There are people who don't have enough, but there tends to be this encouragement for overindulging and all of that. So yeah, how do we make more intentional choices about where are we going to show up for things, and can we pause before we go to the gathering or whatever we decide to do? Can we pause and just have an intention before we walk out the door? Like, how do I want to be? Do I need some time? Do I need a little downtime? Am I going to need some moments to go be by myself and do some breathing if I'm with an intense social interaction? Just making that kind of room for ourselves, like, what do we want to participate in and what don't we want to participate in, because it's not so good. And if we're going to participate, like, how do we want to be, what do we want to bring there for ourselves and others? Yeah, just not getting inundated and overwhelmed, and protecting what's our precious inner life, that as I was saying before, really needs more restfulness this time of year. So yeah, just the sense of what brings happiness, if not things. Then I was listening to a talk by Annie Leonard, who who made the film probably 15 years ago about the story of Stuff. It's an animated it shows really wonderfully where all our stuff comes from and where our stuff goes when we're done with it in the actual proportions in a way that's very graphic and clear and kind of funny. And since then, it's that because she's been the director of Greenpeace after that. But anyway, this was from a talk from Annie Leonard. She's saying it's what brings happiness is the quality of our social relationships. This is across all cultures. The quality of our social relationships, time with friends and family, a sense of meaning beyond just yourself, and coming together with shared goals. She said, for Americans, our consumer brain is overdeveloped and our citizen brain is atrophied. And she advises inviting each other over for dinner and having conversations. Says that rebuilding community builds happiness while we figure out how to fix the messes we're in. So if you have that inclination to just be in other people's company for the enjoyment of their company and talking about things that matter, that may be a really important doorway to happiness if that's something that's available for you. Yeah, and when it comes to giving, the inclination to give, the Buddha talked about there being three kinds of giving. So the giving of wealth, so all the donations we make, or all the physical objects we give, all of that comes under giving of wealth. Or the giving of dharma, the teaching of dharma, or just I hear that as like any way that we are very truthful and like dharma means truth. Any way that we're being truly ourselves and being truthful with other people, that is bringing the dharma to other people. And then a third one, the gift of fearlessness. This one feels especially, I mean, it always feels important, but just especially now given what is happening in our world and how many people are feeling it. Just want to read what the language is that the Buddha uses. One of the most important gifts we can give each other is the gift of fearlessness, described in his words as the giving of protection to beings when they have become frightened on account of kings, thieves, fire, water, enemies, lions, tigers, other wild beasts, dragons, ogres, demons, goblins, etc. So clearly, we're in times like these where we've all been confronting ogres and fire and more. Any way that someone needs to talk about what's going on, and we can be a listening ear, have some empathy for what people are going through that are touched directly or indirectly by the happenings of the world, is a lovely way to give the gift of fearlessness, or just being an ethical person, being somebody who doesn't go around stealing and lying. Just our presence brings a sense to other people. It offers the gift of fearlessness to other people because they can sense that you're not going to harm them in that way. That just the more that we are like that, the more it's palpable for other people and they can feel relaxed in our presence. A couple years ago had the very good fortune to be asked to co-edit an anthology called Muslim American Writers at Home. It's Canadian and US writers who are Muslim writing about the times where they felt welcome, unwelcome, where's their sense of home or not. And I was really, I probably got the biggest education of anybody by reading the submissions that came in. But I approached the whole thing in the mid, it was in the middle of the Trump years with all the Islamophobic stuff that was being said and done. I just approached it with that sense of, oh, good, I can, I get to do something. I get to give the gift of fearlessness to invite these voices for people to hear what's going on inside. Most of the people I know don't know any Muslims, like there's kind of a barrier of sorts there. So not, certainly not true across the board, but yeah, there's been a gap there. So anyway, I just want to read a paragraph from one of the writers who sent a piece called How I Found Love from My Homeless Neighbors. Her name's Mahin Ibrahim, and she's a young Muslim woman who wears a hijab. She lives in LA and had volunteered to go out and to help unhoused people in various ways. But on this particular day, they were going out to give pamphlets for to people to let them know about support events that were happening, where people could get various services. Yeah, and LA is the has the most unhoused people in our in the US. Well above 60,000 on any night of the year. People are living on the streets in LA. So anyway, she writes, I walked around the park with two regular volunteers, and we approached the first group of people who were sitting on a bench having a chat. I greeted a man on the left with silver gray hair and a crew cut. He had a giant purple scar running down his neck, which I tried not to look at. Before I could tell him about the fair, he said, "Please forgive Americans and us. I'm sorry for everything we've done." As a Muslim hijabi, I knew exactly what he was saying. Please forgive us for the anti-Muslim incidents that rose by 65% in 1 year, resulting in hijabis being murdered on the streets. Please forgive us for having a president who is relentless about pushing through his Muslim travel ban and is quick to tweet Islamophobic remarks. His words made me feel incredibly loved. I told him there are good people here and he had no need to apologize. I couldn't stop thinking about him while we walked. Here I was ready to make social niceties while this man had cut straight to the truth. I wasn't used to people being so blunt. In our everyday life, we try to be so politically correct, we often say nothing at all. Yet this man was completely unfiltered, offering up love like he was my best friend. As a homeless person, he was less guarded, less removed, less indifferent. Yeah, it's just one of several stories that people recount about these small things and how incredibly important it was for them to be able to, hold their head up and keep going in their life because of what they, the amount of prejudice and harm that they had, or threat that they'd been subjected to. And certainly it's not, Muslims aren't the only ones by any means, and there are many categories of people right now who their reason to be fearful has gone up. And then some of you all may feel that yourselves in whatever circumstances that you are facing. You may feel that you that there's more danger for you in some ways. So I read that mostly just to say, like, what a tiny bit of care and truth it takes to be of huge help to people and to me, that seems like the biggest sense of what is, what is most needed at this point, is just to see people, hear people, check in on them. Hey, how's this stuff landing for you? Do you know, are the people you know okay? People, there's so many people that need to be able to process what's going on for themselves. So, just that sense of it doesn't take much to give the gift of fearlessness. So I think I will end just with a poem from one of the first nuns that ordained with the Buddha. There's this retelling, these reimagining of their writings, the first free women. I don't know if you can see that. Anyway, I think I read something from it last time I was here too. I just love these. This one's called Suba, the Goldsmith's Daughter. They all told me the same thing. There's only one way to be truly safe. Get as much as you can and hold on tight. We don't take greed seriously enough. I grew up in a house made of gold, so I ought to know. You see what it does to people, slowly, over time. It changes them. It takes over. You find yourself saying, I'll learn to be generous. I'll give it all away. But first, I just need a little bit more. Stop lying to yourself. See a clenched fist for what it is. Not tomorrow, not in 20 years, now. I am Suba, the goldsmith's daughter, eating whatever is offered, sleeping wherever I can. This is what freedom looks like, not a bucket of coins buried out back. Just like you, I spent a long time going back and forth, but eventually I had to stand up and say it out loud. I will not be owned. So yeah, just that sense of how our belongings and our chasing after more shapes us and owns us in a certain way. So yeah, just being able to bring more awareness as we go through, anytime, but as we go through this season, to how do we take care of ourselves? So that we're resourced. There's a woman, let's see, is it Trisha Hershey, who is the founder of the Knapp Ministry. There's great quotes from her, but the title of her book says it all. Rest is resistance. She's an African American activist who is advocating for, like, how are we going to fix anything if we're all sleep deprived and stressed out, and that's how we treat ourselves? It's not going to work that way. So just that sense of taking care of ourselves, because we are each valuable people, and we're the ones to do the, that are here for ourselves at all times. But also in any way that we want to be able to give in the world, just that sense of really allowing ourselves to get the rest and nourishment and resourcing that we need. Oh, well, we're right at the end of our time here. Well, thank you all for your company and good presence and sharing in this thinking out what our time ahead might look like, just being together and supporting each other and having a little bit more intentional way that we go through this precious season of the darkest time of winter, that we really be able to enjoy and absorb the many benefits of that time of year, of this time of year. So gathering Any benefit, any blessings from the time we've spent together? Any of our own reflections, sense of understanding, awakening, any of that that we've shared here? Just letting that radiate deeply inside so that we each get to have that benefit, as well as radiating it out for all beings, for all who suffer in any way, from those who have too much and those who have too little. Just wishing well, wishing safety, wishing freedom for all of those who are struggling to find safety and freedom. May all beings be happy and at peace. May all beings be free.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.